I'll just identify the tape. This is tape two, tape one, side two. Let me ask you, when was it first evident that you were going to go to college? Did this idea arise in your own mind? Did you have a teacher as advisor who suggested it, or was it something from your parents?
I suspect I probably anticipated that I would go to college because my sisters had gone to college.
Okay.
And so I suspect it was always somewhat in my mind, or perhaps my parents made specific comments about it. I don't really know.
Okay.
Most likely they that they had said something at some time or another, at least my father probably had said something at some time or another that led me to believe that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I would guess.
Okay.
I'm sure they were more interested in their boys getting an education than they were worried about the girls getting an education.
I see. Okay. That's not unusual for that time.
It may have been partly due to the times and partly due to the fact that the girls already had an education, and so they became more interested in it on that basis too. And they were, of course, maybe older and might have thought about things like that more.
Yeah. Was there
at the time that we were young?
Was there any pressure for you to come back to the farm to work?
No. Only in summer vacations, of course.
Okay. And that's what you did in the vacations.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then tell me something about how you came to choose University of Colorado.
Well, I thought about a number of different schools, I think I was really primarily interested in education in engineering colleges because they had all of the courses with fascinating names that I didn't understand what the names meant, like thermodynamics and all these exotic names that sounded like they would be interesting courses.
So there's nothing like that at Greeley for you in the State Teachers College?
They had the usual physics and chemistry, but that probably didn't sound quite exotic enough for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that I was really... somehow I have a feeling I wasn't quite as interested in science as I was in engineering. And I think when I was in grade school, I know I wanted to be an inventor. And I think I was somewhat fascinated by Edison.
Oh.
And somehow I had found out about that and the inventions that he made.
Do you think your sister told you, or you read it in the newspaper, or in the popular
mechanics? I think it was probably in the history book, chances are.
Okay. So that was in school that you learned about Edison?
I suspect so.
Okay, fine.
And,
that's very nice.
Yeah. And so I was quite interested in that. And in fact, after I'd had this erector set for a while, I probably built most of the models that were in the book and then started making some things of my own. And they had probably some advertisement somewhere showing more complicated erector sets, and I remember sending a postcard to the erector set manufacturer telling him that I had invented these various things with the erector set, and that if they wanted to have my inventions, I demanded a bigger erector set. But I never heard anything back on that.
That's pretty good, though. It's something of an entrepreneur getting more support. That's very good. Okay. Well, did you have any advice?
I couldn't have been very old at that time. I suppose
right.
around 10 or 11 when I did that.
Okay. Let's move then to the University of Colorado.
The reason I went to Colorado was probably, I think, primarily financial, because I looked at these others and I could perhaps have gotten scholarships to some of them, but I think, and partly on the advice of my science teachers there in high school, that I probably didn't even really try to get the. I would have needed like a $4,000 scholarship to go to something like Carnegie Tech, and so I never finally ended up even trying for those.
Uh-huh.
Although I remember considering it.
you were interested in places like Carnegie, was Rensselaer or MIT?
MIT, I think. I may have, I certainly remember seeing a Carnegie catalog, or writing off and getting a Carnegie catalog. And I can't remember sure about MIT.
That's all right.
And it seems there may have been one or two others, too, that I can't remember right now.
Fine. When you got to the University of Colorado, were you in the engineering program?
I started in the engineering program, and I thought about, I think I was most interested in becoming an electrical engineer. But the first year there was the same for all engineering students. And so I talked with my father about that, and he was definitely against that because he felt that electrical engineering was too dangerous.
Too dangerous?
Yeah, working with high voltages and that sort of thing.
Oh, I see.
And so I decided that then that I would take chemical engineering.
Okay.
And during the first year that I was there, they started this program called Engineering Physics. And one of the professors there, Frank Walls, was the prime mover, I think, behind this engineering physics program, and so he was...
what's his last name again?
W-A-L-Z.
Okay.
He was also, I think, wanted to, appeared to want to get the best students into his program. So I assume it was after I'd probably been there about a quarter that that he talked with me about going into engineering physics.
And how were you?
So that was the first. Pardon?
How were you recognized as one of the best students?
Probably by the grades.
Okay.
And I assume that's why he either he said directly, or I assumed it was that reason that he was talking to me about it. And I suspect he probably said that.
What did he say to you that convinced you to go into engineering physics?
Well, I think the final convincer was that he said I could arrange my sophomore courses so that I could temporize for another year and decide at the end of my sophomore year whether to go into chemical engineering or engineering physics. So I started, so I switched, well, at first I was going to take chemical engineering and consider the possibility of doing engineering physics, and then at some point I decided that I was probably more interested in engineering physics than I was in chemical engineering. So at that point, probably close to the end of my freshman year, I signed up for engineering physics and took qualitative analysis so that I would be ready to go into chemical engineering if I decided during my first quarter of the sophomore year. And at that, let's see, okay,
what else did I have to take?
I guess it was, that was... in the fall of 19, I started college in the fall of 1941, so that was the fall of 1942 that I was taking qualitative analysis.
Okay.
And I think that was the only special course that differed from the, or that I really had to have to switch over into chemical engineering. Then at the end of the first quarter, I decided that that I probably really wasn't interested in going on in chemical engineering, so I did not take quantitative analysis. But I did go on and take physical chemistry the next year, partly, I think, primarily because I thought it would be an interesting class. I did not take organic chemistry until sometime later.
So you did take organic, even so?
Yeah.
Now, in switching to engineering physics, what were you going to be learning there?
Just a primarily a general, as it turned out, it's a general physics background, and not very different from the students who had physics majors in arts and sciences, except that it was really you took more physics courses and more math than the than the regular physics majors. And also, I think the another one of the things that really motivated me to go to into engineering school rather than to arts and sciences was the fact that they didn't have so much English and literature requirements or and foreign language, which I was not very interested in.
Okay, I see. What began did you begin focusing in your sophomore, junior years on any particular type of engineering physics? What physics interested you the most?
I'm sure that I was still more interested in electricity and magnetism, stemming from my earlier interests in radio than in anything else. I do remember doing a little more studying on astronomy at that time. I think they had an astronomy club at University of Colorado, so I remember going to some of their meetings. And I also picked up a more complex astronomy book in the library and read that.
What was that one?
And I can't remember the name of it. The only thing that ever comes up to me was Russell Dugan and Stewart, but I looked at that book later on, and it didn't look like the same book to me.
Okay.
That I had looked at. And so I've never been able to remember what book that was.
Okay. This was just before or just during, I don't have the exact years
that
yet.
That was probably either my freshman or sophomore year.
Okay. But during that time in the Rockies outside of Boulder and the general area, I think one or two solar observatories were being built.
At Climax, high altitude observatory?
Was that?
I think so.
Were you aware of it at that
no.
time? Okay.
No.
So you had no contact at all with astronomy other than the club?
That's right. There were no really professional astronomers.
What did the club do?
The physics department had a 3-inch telescope, and the primary thing that I remember is taking the 3-inch telescope and going out and looking at the planets and the stars.
No experiments or anything in part of your physics courses involved with telescopes? Or making instruments, observing the sun's spectrum or anything?
No, not particularly.
Oh, so you had no experience with that?
No.
During your undergraduate years?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you mentioned that you started as a freshman in 41, but you graduated in 47.
Mm-hmm.
Was there an extended program? Did you take off time for the war?
Or in 1943, I started, in fact, I was... I think I probably got classified in 1A in the spring of my sophomore year. At any rate, I know that that I think my dad probably, I think I was considered, I may have considered quitting school in the spring quarter of my sophomore year. At any rate, I took off on the spring vacation. I worked on the farm, and my dad, I think, had on the basis of needing me on the farm, had gotten me reclassified from 1A and into a deferment category.
Right.
And I spent quite a bit of time that spring at home. I started out, I think. Going to school 3 days and then going home and working on the farm Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and coming back. And I think I did that for 3 or 4 weeks. And by that time, I think I was probably getting behind on my courses enough that I kind of tapered off on that to a certain extent. And so I probably was, I don't remember the really now, but I may have spent most of the weekends at home that spring quarter, or maybe some 3-day weekends or something like that. At any rate, I managed to get through without getting too many grades below A. And
this was also a deferment.
Yeah, way. Yeah, yeah. And so I think I must have been deferred that spring quarter. And then I quit school and I worked on the farm for the next year.
I see.
And taking a couple of correspondence courses, one on differential equations. I guess that was I guess that was the only one I took. But I also read a book that I would not have taken in school. I got a book on AC circuits, which was the electrical engineering course, and read that whole thing. And I also picked up a book on magnetic circuits, which was really too complicated for me, so I didn't read very much of that, as best I remember.
Okay. Then you must have re-entered University of Colorado.
Then in August 1944, I was classified 1A, and in August 1944, I went into the Army.
Oh, I see.
And actually, I thought that was sort of silly at the time because I wrote and told the draft board that since they waited so long to pick me up, why didn't they just wait another couple of months until the harvest was over, in about October, but they didn't see it that way, so I went in August the 20th, which was just about the time the harvest is starting.
Oh, gosh.
So, but then I guess, they don't have all as many options either, which I probably didn't realize at the time.
Right. So where did you end up?
So I went, took basic training at Fort Hood in Texas, and took the various examinations and so forth that they offered down there, and did well enough on them to get into the Army Specialized Training Program, which was a college program, and went to Stanford University and took 6 months of electrical engineering courses there from January to June of 1945. And from there I went to a replacement depot or something like that in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Had sort of an exotic name for it, but it turned out to be a holding place from which the troops were sent to whoever needed them. Mm-hmm. And I was picked up by a Ordnance Light Maintenance Division there at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Yes, Ordnance Light Maintenance. And that's a company, Ordnance Light Maintenance Company, which there's usually one Ordnance Light Maintenance Company assigned to each combat division, and they're supposed to repair the rifles and the trucks and whatever you can repair real quickly right there in the field.
Mm,
and I think we were scheduled for the invasion of Japan, and so the first thing that I did when I got there, the first day, I went up to the first sergeant and asked for a furlough, and he said I couldn't have a furlough, so I went to the company captain and asked for a furlough, and so he looked at the regulations or something and said, yeah, we got to send you on furlough, since I hadn't had a, you had to be sent on a furlough before you could be sent overseas, I think, so I think the second day I was in the company, I went home on furlough. And that turned out to be a Sunday, and so you couldn't get transportation on a Sunday. So I started out hitchhiking and hitchhiked through from Fort Jackson to Chicago. I think I just missed the train or something. Oh yeah, I had a couple of war. I didn't have any money, so I had a couple of war bonds that I. But I couldn't find any place to cash them, so I took them with me. And so when I got to Cincinnati. It was Monday morning, and I think we got there just shortly after the train that I wanted to catch. I was lucky and caught an all-night ride, and that worried me because the guy drove fairly fast, and there were all these real windy roads. So I tried to stay awake, and see that he didn't go to sleep, but I couldn't stay awake myself. Anyway, somewhere in Kentucky, we caught up with the train that I had wanted to be on, but we didn't, I guess by that time the train was moving faster or something, so we didn't stay caught up with them, and by the time I get to Cincinnati and got the bonds cashed, it was too late to catch the continuation of the train, so I hitchhiked on to Chicago and got there in time to finally catch the train that I wanted to be on to go home on. And so I think it was probably a 10-day furlough, if I remember correctly, and so I was home for maybe 7 days, something like that, and went back to South Carolina, and expecting that maybe the company I was assigned to would already have pulled out, and I might be back in the replacement depot. But as it happened, they were there and didn't actually leave for another a month or so. That was in early July, I think, when I went on furlough, and the company left there.
This is 45.
Yeah, in 1945, approximately August the 15th, I expect, and went to Seattle, and the company had a troop train pretty much to themselves, and I think all of the company equipment, which was extensive, was on that same train because they had all kinds of tow trucks and various other pieces of equipment And when we got to Seattle, when this company would be marching through the streets, I think there were four Buck Privates in the whole company, so they would keep pointing to the Buck Private and say, "How did you get in there?" The other soldiers around, which is kind of amusing.
And, but then, did you ever go overseas?
We left on August the 24th, 19... am I getting mixed up on things? Let's see. Okay. From 41 to 43, I was in college. 44, I went in the Army, so this was 1945. So we went over, left for Saipan on August 24th, 1945. And we were on Army, I think they were called APAs. They were pretty good-sized boats, and they were the type of ships that were designed primarily as troop carriers. Mm-hmm. And they'd have about bunks about six high, and so it was the troop quarters were very compact. Mm-hmm. They had a 5-inch gun on them, and several 40-millimeter guns and some 20-millimeters. All anti-aircraft guns was the only armament on these troop carriers. Hmm. And we were the first, since that was just shortly before VJ Day, we were the first boat to go over with not as part of a convoy. So they were at least somewhat worried about Japanese submarines who hadn't had the word yet about the ending of the war.
Right, still possible. Could you sum up relatively quickly? I'm pretty anxious to get back and into the Colorado years.
Yeah.
What you did? You did go to Japan? Were you in the occupation
forces? I went to Saipan, and okay. I spent my entire time at Saipan. We stopped by. We were at Eniwetok, I think, for one day, and I spent my entire time there at Saipan. The Ordnance Light Mains Company didn't last long. They had so many. Long service personnel that they shortly broke that up, and we went into the ones of us that were left went into an ordnance depot company, and we ran a warehouse there. And the thing that I got into was running the company generators, which supplied the diesel electric generators, which supplied the. So I spent most of my time there doing wiring and running the generators and keeping them going and being a part of the fire company.
Okay.
Because the company also had a fire engine.
Mm-hmm. When were you discharged from the Army?
One other thing of interest there was in the spring, they. Had these after the war was over, they set up these Army War Colleges, and they had one at Schofield Barracks in Oahu, Hawaii. And so I went. I was accepted to go to that, so I went to that and took organic chemistry and a speech course.
So that's where you took the organic chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I see. Mm-hmm. While you were still in the
that
Army.
Was I think that was a, yes, that was a six week course, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there, I don't remember what kind of boat we took there. The boat that we took back was a Hawaiian inter-island steamer, which was intended not really for ocean trips. And so it was very slow, and we had a long, slow voyage back to, we stopped at Guam and then went the 100 miles onto Saipan. And so that was kind of an interesting trip. And they had a lot of Hawaiian boys on it who were just in the Army. So. The guys who had been there at Schofield Barracks had higher ranks, so they got all the cabins, and the Hawaiian boys slept down below.
So you were discharged when?
In August. I get these dates mixed up now. It was either the 22nd or the 24th of 1946.
In August of 46.
Yeah, in August of 46.
Okay, fine. Did you go directly back to the University of Colorado?
Yes.
Okay.
And
back into engineering physics.
Back into engineering physics.
As
and
a
with
junior
enough courses from the time at Stanford University and the organic chemistry at in Hawaii to take primarily senior courses. Okay. And so I finished then took me the 9 month school year plus a summer mm-hmm. to finish and get my degree in engineering physics.
Okay. Had you had any contact through your undergraduate years in engineering physics with the people who you later were to work with in the University of Colorado Rocket Group?
Yeah, I certainly had, and not so much in my sophomore year, I think, because perhaps I didn't get to know many of the engineering physics majors, and to some extent it was a different group when I came back as a senior. Mm-hmm. But
who were the people?
I think that that Stanley Miller was certainly in my courses, and I don't remember when I first met him. And Russell Knighty, I think, was there when I was a senior also, okay. if I remember correctly. He may have been a year behind me. I'm not
That's
sure.
Okay. I'm particularly interested if you had contact at this time with Rince.
I don't think he was there yet.
Okay.
I think he came later on. But, of course, Walls and the four main professors at that time were Pete and Pohl and Broxson and Walls and Lubovich. And
mm-hmm. How do you spell the last one?
Lubovich. He was okay. the optics professor.
Chich.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were you becoming aware of their research, and what kind of research was there?
Well, I don't think that there was much research going on there at that time. I think that the, in fact, as far as I was aware, I was not aware of any research going on in the University of Colorado at that time. I suppose there was some, but I think that they were pretty hard pressed just to teach the courses that they had to teach. I'm sure that was true in the physics department that there was not. Probably that much time left over for research, and I was not aware of any that was going on. Although there were, I think, some graduate students there at the time, but mm-hmm. not very many.
Okay.
Just a few.
What upon your graduation? Now this was in 1947, but was it in the spring of 1947, June of 1947?
In August 1947.
Okay. What were your plans as you were coming toward graduation as to what you'd be doing after graduation?
Well, I think I wanted to go to work.
You wanted to go to work.
I wanted to go to work, and in the course of talking to some of the people who from companies who came to interview, when I mentioned that I wanted to do research, they were indicating that you really ought to have a PhD in order to do that,
mm-hmm.
and so that was probably one of the things that got me started going to graduate school, and I think I applied in two different schools. That was probably in the spring that I talked to some of those people, so that was probably motivated me to a certain extent, and then I suspect that some of the professors may have encouraged me to go on to graduate school too, although I don't remember that specifically.
What schools did you apply to?
I think I applied to Stanford and Purdue. Mm-hmm. At least I certainly I think probably the way I picked those up was from posters on the bulletin boards advertising mm-hmm. their graduate programs and mentioning their teaching fellowships and that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And I probably picked those because they had fairly good-sized stipends on their their teaching fellowships. And I remember that the Purdue teaching fellowship was $1,200 a year, which was pretty large
yeah.
at that time.
Did you go to graduate school in the beginning?
And so I that fall, and I did go to Purdue University.
Uh-huh.
And was a half-time teaching fellow there.
Uh-huh. But apparently you did not get a degree from there.
That's
what,
right.
What happened?
Yeah. I also had GI Bill at that time.
Sure.
And so I was going under that. And so I was had plenty of money at the time I was at Purdue. And so I went there 2 years, and I guess my assumption, of course, was that I'd get a master's, you know, at the end of 1 year, and you know, you usually get the impression you'll get a master's after 1 year and a PhD after 3 years, something like that. But the Purdue program didn't really run that way, and so I spent 2 years there, and I think I really didn't want to go to school anymore at that time. The summer vacation between my 2 years at Purdue, I looked for a job, and I looked at Gates Rubber Company in Denver, Colorado, and I guess I went up to visit at University of Colorado and found out that they were starting this pointing control project, and somehow I found out that I might be able to get a job on that also. So I applied or whatever, and so I had the possibility of working for Gates Rubber Company or at the University of Colorado, and I decided to work at University of Colorado on the pointing control project.
Gates
Rubber Company, yes. Okay. They made tires.
All right, primarily. Tell me, do you recall how you learned about the pointing control project?
I think I just went up there to visit, probably, and found out about it that way.
You don't remember through who?
No.
Okay, fine. This was then in 49?
In the summer of 1948.
In summer of 48.
Mm-hmm.
And was there anything that we should talk about
it was
the graduate program at Purdue that you feel was important in your later career?
Well, I worked, I was working on a master's thesis at Purdue under a man named Carl Meissner, who was a very well-known spectroscopist who had come from Germany because he was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife was also Jewish. And so that was, I had always been interested in spectroscopy also, I think primarily just because of the pretty colors, red, green, and blue.
Was that
and,
Meissner?
Meissner.
Meissner, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there was of course Lisa Meitner, but this is not the same person at all.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And this is when you got interested in spectroscopy?
Well, I was always interested in it, I think, just because of the pretty colors, and so mm-hmm. I decided that was probably the most interesting of the things that they had around Purdue mm-hmm. to me. They did quite a bit of solid-state physics, which I didn't know anything about at the time I got there, and also they did a lot of nuclear physics, which I don't think I had much interest in, partly because I didn't understand very much about it, and and partly because I think, the first year I was there, I took the nuclear physics course, and that didn't help my interest any, as far as that goes, in nuclear physics, because, one thing, it was taught mostly by people who had quite a bit of accent, and
accent?
Yeah, they were mostly foreign-born mm-hmm. Professors, so it was harder to understand what they were saying.
Hmm.
And not only that, nuclear physics is and quantum mechanics are, by to me at least, nowhere near as easy to understand as the classical physics courses, and mm-hmm. so I probably was somewhat disillusioned with not being able to really understand what was going on in
But from your background,
those courses.
Were you more interested in experimentation, though, rather than theory?
I think so. Except perhaps in terms of the mathematical part of it, there I think I was really more interested in really understanding logic behind the mathematics than I was in just knowing how to manipulate it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the pointing control project then. It's interesting that you referred to it as a pointing control project. Was that the primary thrust of the project, and who was heading it?
It was. Okay, I think that even when it first started, that it was primarily Dave Stacey and Jim Jackson and Frank Walls and Pete and Paul. Mm-hmm. J.C. Stacks and Walls and Pete and Paul were the main cogs in starting it.
To your knowledge, are they still there? Or?
Well, Pete and Paul is retired, mm-hmm. certainly. He, I would, although I haven't heard, I would suspect he may be dead by now. Walls is dead. Stacy, the last I knew, was at Ball Brothers, I think.
Okay.
That's and right. Jackson, I heard recently where he was, but I think I've forgotten.
They may know in Colorado, possibly.
Some people probably would know, yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what was your job, and what was your first impression of what they were up to?
Well, my first summer, I think that was when I met Rince. Was the first summer I was on that, if I remember correctly. Anyway, I started out that summer to design a coronagraph for Rocket.
Had you ever heard of a coronagraph before?
No. And so I started looking at these various things from the library that probably somebody gave me something to start with about coronagraphs, and then I looked up some of the literature in the library, and in particular found out that the high altitude observatory at Climax was a coronagraph, and I remember trying to look up an article, I think it was on that particular thing, in which the reference was to MNRAS, and so it took quite a while of talking to various people around there before we could figure out what in the world what journal MNRAS was.
So you really were starting in the dark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were clearly, did you choose this point and control project over Gates because of the astronomy? Did you know what it was going to be used for?
Oh yeah, yeah. I knew what their purpose was, I'm sure, and I think it sounded more interesting than testing tires at Gates.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think I was fussy at all about what kind of a job I had that summer.
Okay, what was the atmosphere of the project when, as you recall it, when you first worked with them? Were they having a lot of problems? Was there a lot of pressure? Was it a collegial kind of a group, or more of an engineering?
Well, there was certainly no pressure that first summer, because the thing was just beginning to get organized. They had just gotten this contract with the Air Force, mm-hmm. to work on a point and control, and I think I was really
Who was the one who drove the contract? Was it Walsh or Pete and Paul? The one who actually was the PI, let's say, with the Air Force.
Well, Pete and Paul, I suspect, probably would have been the PI, but I'm not sure about that. I would imagine that Walls probably would have been more instrumental in pushing for it, because I think he pushed harder for things for the physics department than starting the engineering physics program, and
mm-hmm.
He built an awful lot of the laboratory equipment himself that was used there at University mm-hmm. of Colorado. So he seemed more interested in the students than anyone else. So I think he was probably one of the big guns toward pushing things for the university and for the physics department.
Mm-hmm. Was there more of a
motivating force probably than Pete and Paul, who was head of the department? Because I think Pete and Paul kind of would probably tend to sit back and let whatever happened happen to some extent.
Good. What about the motive for getting into rocket sonde work? Did people talk about V2s, getting onto V2s, or was this specifically for the Arabi? And why missile research or rocket sonde research at that time? What was the motive? What did they want to do?
I really have no idea what the motivation was, and it could have been Jim Jackson or Dave Stacy who was really the motivator. It's hard to tell for me, and if I ever knew, I've forgotten.
Okay.
What the real motivation for doing it was, but I don't suppose that it was because of any particular interest there in the type of research that was going to come out of it, unless rents may have been a factor in that, but he was certainly brand new there.
Where did he come from?
At that time, he was, I think, a student at... He was either a student of Paul's at Ohio State, I think it was, or he was a colleague of his there. I mean, not a colleague, but a co-student, whatever you call that. Paul, I think. I worked with him here. He was at Goddard for a time, and I worked with him for a while. And
Paul?
I think his name is Fred Paul.
P-A-U-L?
Yeah. Okay. Fred Paul, I think. I should know.
That's okay. But considering that Paul was here at Goddard, he was interested in ionospherics or...?
Paul was primarily a spectroscopist.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's his main interest as far as I know.
Okay.
And so I think Rentz was kind of trained as a spectroscopist.
Okay. And then he came to University of Colorado around this time.
Yeah, I think probably in 1948, I suspect.
Okay. Now, I'm interested in the fact that you were assigned to either build a chronograph or make a chronograph work. Which was it?
I think I was probably more interested actually in the pointing control than in the chronograph.
Yeah.
But somehow I got assigned to working on the chronograph.
I see.
And because I remember going down and offering the guys advice on the pointing control, how to work on it, you know.
Okay, let me turn this tape.